What a beautiful morning.
It is now.
Oh, thanks for getting up to make the coffee.
I didn't.
What?
I made this coffee yesterday.
But it tastes like you made it today.
That's because I used yesterday's coffee. It tastes like you made it today.
That's a time saver.
Yeah.
Hey, if we leave now, we could catch the ferry to Grassy Point, have a picnic like we used to.
That sounds great. But I can't. I gotta make tomorrow's coffee.
Can't we worry about tomorrow's coffee tomorrow?
Nope. The only reason why we have today's coffee is because I worried about it yesterday.
So, tomorrow we'll drink the yesterday's coffee that you made today?
Yes, and I'll make the next day's yesterday's coffee tomorrow.
Then can we go on a picnic?
We'll see.
Ted, I really...
What? Damn it, Jill!
I'm sorry.
I'm doing this for us.
I know.
Someone has to think about the future.
I understand.
Do you?
For the rest of our lives, we will always be one pot of coffee ahead.
Until that day when I make a pot of coffee that neither of us will ever drink.
I'm gonna lie down.
TBTL!
These are the circuits of history, gentlemen. They'll take us to any point in time we wish.
You were given a power. It's in the wind.
Oh, my God! Woo! Listen to that horn! Oh, my God! Oh, she's beautiful!
Sounds like you're really going through some tough stuff right now. It's too bad there's not doctors for your mind.
My mom's in prison for 2 years for tasering up to 22 dogs. She has this weird condition where she smells like a cat that happens to smell like Hamburger Helper.
Oh, this is special. This is special!
That is a sturdy microphone stand. That's the good stuff. Hi, everybody. Welcome. Got all the equipment working here at Burbank Springs. I'm very happy about it. Welcome to a Thursday afternoon edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
The vibes will be the illest, and the jams, gnar ridic.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
Okay, let's do it.
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill. In Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. This right here is episode 2742 in a collector series.
I'll say, what's up, dog?
Pod Dog is crashed out on her dog bed. She's here. She's in still. This shows you how clean I'm being. She still has a kind of, what would you call it? There's just a variety of string cheese wrappers spread around her body. She's like a like in the movies when somebody goes on a bender and like they've just decided they don't want to live anymore and their shabby apartment is full of empty beer cans, and that's her with cheese stick wrappers. So just that's a view into her life. Here's a view into this episode of the show.
Let the fun begin.
We got a lot to talk about. You know Alex Trebek, the noted rapper.
Never let me slip, because if I slip, then I'm slipping.
And also Jeopardy host. Well, they asked him for some reason to moderate the gubernatorial debate in Pennsylvania.
And what happened next can only be described as insane.
Like, really insane what happened. We have audio. We have an account from people who were there. Yeah. Lot to unpack from Alex Trebek's moderating of the gubernatorial debate. We'll talk about that. And keeping things in the Northeast, it's never too early to get up, get buy-in on those Christmas presents. And we've got one for you. A woman in Maine will make you a cuckoo clock out of moose turd.
And what we did see is we took them turds and we crammed them in between the number there. So that's 1:30, 2:30, 3:30.
That is not David Cross doing a voice. I feel the need to clarify. That is a real Mainer. And she really is selling moose turd in every variety you can imagine. So we'll dip into her world for a few moments. And Blur's Days. Today is Blur's Day. And we will give some shout-outs. Well, really, you will give the shout-outs, and we'll just, I guess, amplify them or something. Let's do all that, though, with the help of this guy, the longest-running Cobro of the show. I thought he smelled bad on the outside. I think he's just, what is the, I shouldn't try to do this stuff from memory. It's a disaster. He just got his first taste of the filthy side of this business. That's what I was trying to remember. And he just likes to be tan. It just feels good. He's sorry. He's Andrew.
Oh, my God. I have a sesame stick problem.
Walsh. He joins us now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington.
We got out of this trend for a while. It was a trend. It harkens back to the early summer of 2018 when you were using a lot
of drugs. God, what a wild time.
You were using my own words against me at the beginning of the shows. And then
thanks to my friend over at Marsupial Gurgle, who I witnessed in the wild get recognized for Marsupial Gurgle.
Wait, how so?
It was yesterday's coffee Livewire, not to be confused with today's coffee, which is there is Livewire happening on Thursday night. Tonight, as you listen to this show, you could come to Portland and watch us do Livewire. But anyway, last week after the show, I was talking to our friend Lynn, a.k.a. Femme DeMort, a.k.a. the person who maintains Marsupial Gurgle and who sends me audio drops of you saying regrettable things. Anyway, somebody said I was talking to some folks that knew about TBTL while I was also talking to Lynn. And one of them said, if something happens to you, who gets the audio archive? I think he was under the impression that we ran Marsupial Gurgle. And he goes, you guys have absolutely the best audio archive of like any show. And then he was talking to Lynn, and he goes, you know, Lynn goes, that's me. I do Marsupial Gurgle. And the guy was like, what? And my memory is that the guy was more impressed to meet Lynn than me. And I feel like that's wrong.
That is wrong. But honestly, who works harder?
Lynn, not even close.
Yeah, regarding TBTL.
I mean, you're right. That's a good point. So anyway, I was playing drops of you for a long time. Then I think you kind of got annoyed at me doing it, and I'm not trying to antagonize you. Not at the top of the show. Maybe at the end of the show I'll try to antagonize
That's more of a the second third of the show kind of vibe that we go for.
I'm a little worried right now, Andrew.
What? What's wrong?
I may have made a terrible, terrible mistake. I wanted to have some Diet Coke, and there was one Diet Coke left in the house, and I drank it during the recording of Wednesday's show. Now, let's just say, full disclosure, and maybe the yesterday's coffee clip at the top of the show tipped you off to it. This is the Thursday edition of the show. It is being recorded on Wednesday afternoon. Why? Because a couple things. I'm traveling tomorrow, and you've got something going on, too, on Thursday, that is, right?
Yes, I will be having moles removed from my body at the doctor's office.
I also learned I'm not supposed to use wart remover for that. Somebody tweeted at me that that's a terrible idea. Maybe we'll get into that, too.
Oh, okay.
So you've got medical issues. I've got radio issues. So tomorrow, Thursday was not going to be an ideal day. I'll be on planes. It's just not going to be a good day for us to try to do the show. So here we are on Wednesday, and we're doing the show. So I just want to get that out of the way right at the top, let people know. If we say something that seems off, it's because this is actually being recorded on Wednesday. So I drank the last Diet Coke we had while I was recording Wednesday's episode with you. And so then I was still thirsty. And on the porch, we have a basket that is full of soda cans and beer cans, and not just cans, but they have beer and soda in them. And this is because we have a cooler that's down by the swimming pool in the summertime. And, you know, it was like we're having a big get together. There'll be tons of stuff in there, and then the ice will melt, and then it's kind of like gets a little funky in there. And then but I'm very dead set against throwing out perfectly good cans of beer and soda that their only crime is they were sitting in a cooler that had ice that then turned into water.
Oh, yeah.
I think these things are super shelf stable. Carrie is less convinced.
That's my wife.
And she'll probably hear this, and she may want to clarify her feelings on the matter. But I think that she seems to me to be very into erring on the side of caution when it comes to throwing away things that are, to my mind, sealed and safe. But then she'll leave butter out on the counter for weeks and then eat it.
Yeah, that's
which to me seems way more dangerous.
Yeah, you see that New England a lot. When I was visiting Canada at a like Airbnb, not an Airbnb, an old school an old B&B, as they called it back in before Airbnb was actually a thing. And they and Genevieve got so excited about this idea of keeping butter out that she bought this like old fashioned kind of device. It's like a butter bell, I believe you call it. You fill the bottom with water and it makes water seal. Yeah, and you just leave it out on the counter. I've always been against that.
See, I'm good with that. I think that'll work. And I'm not against butter being out for a couple days, but like we don't eat a ton of butter on things, which I don't know why, because frankly I love it. I spent almost an entire episode the other day talking about butter on crackers and what a delight that is. But the deal will be the butter will come out, it'll go in the dish, we'll use it because we're having something that necessitates butter. And then like 2 weeks will go by and it'll still be sitting there and I'll say, and we'll go to use it again. I'll go, we got to get some new butter. She goes, No, that's fine.
No.
So for some reason, but she would be very quick to throw out, to me, she would be very quick to throw out like soda that had been in a cooler but was never opened.
What?
So here's where
Carrie.
I know, right?
Carrie.
Yeah.
We can have you on the show if you want to talk about it. I don't want to besmirch you when you're not here to defend yourself, but what are you talking about, Carrie? Like, I am with you. I'm with you on most things about, like, food squeamishness. As a matter of fact, Genevieve's got this piece of some sort of fancy cheese that's been in the fridge forever, and it's starting to grow mold on it inside its bag. And today I almost threw it out, but then I heard Genevieve's voice in my head saying, no, you just cut away the mold. Like, to me, I'm so persnickety about that stuff. But cans of soda, those will be around long after humans have left the earth.
That's what I would always say. So today when I consumed the one Diet Coke in the house, I went out on the porch to get this kind of to see if there was a Diet Coke in this cache of sodas from this summer that have now been removed from the cooler and put in what I think was actually a container that plants are supposed to go in. That's more detail than the listeners need. Anyway, I was very proud of myself for a few reasons. One, because I hand wiped off all of these cans. Because the cooler got kind of gross, and so I washed the cooler out, and then some of the cans had like a little bit of film on them from the water. I washed them all. So I was like, I really felt like I was saving us some money as a family. Crack open the Diet Coke. It tastes like it turned.
Really?
Can Diet Coke go bad? Yes. And I don't want, believe me, I am not incentivized to admit that this Diet Coke does not taste okay.
Yeah, I mean, after my little outburst there, maybe I have some apologizing to do. But that's a problem. Now, I remember being in college and people being like, bro, that – no, they didn't say bra then. They said dude. Yeah. Dude.
Did you go to college again?
Yeah. Last year. It was night school. but people be like, dude, that beer is skunked. That beer is skunked. That was an Ian's refrigerator. Right. And then it got warm. You can't just cool it off again, which, I mean – even if that was a thing, we were drinking such cheap beer and we were underage and it was beer. Like, you know, like I was never too like picky. I never tasted a beer and I was like, oh, this beer is skunked. If somebody told me it was skunked, I might go along with it. But I guess that might be a real thing if you actually are an adult and you're drinking a good beer that has gone bad. I'm sure that's a thing, but I'm very surprised to hear that soda gets cold in a can unopened, then warms down again, and then is bad. Now, did you cool it back off? Are you drinking warm soda?
No, because the weather has turned. Have you noticed the chill in the air?
Oh, okay, so it's kind of cool just from the...
That's the other reason I was proud of myself. I was like, yeah, I'm refrigerating these sodas and beers outside at no cost to me, the consumer.
And so, again, saving money for the family.
That's all I'm trying to do.
Right.
Everybody knows I'm notoriously careful with my money.
And here you are getting persecuted for it.
Yeah.
It's not fair, man. It's not fair.
It's really not fair. I just believe in free speech for everyone.
I know.
Although I'll tell you what, now I've had like 5 swigs of it. I don't know if my mouth is adjusting or what. I'm at a website now. Can Diet Coke go bad in the can? Someone's put a lot... Somebody.org, somebody has put a lot of work into this. They have a graph, soft drink expiration date.
Wow.
And it's got 3 columns. Unopened, Coca-Cola lasts 4. If it's stored in a pantry, it lasts for 6 to 9 months after the printed date. If it's stored in a refrigerator, it's also 6 to 9 months. Diet Pepsi lasts for 6 to 9 months in either a pantry or a refrigerator. 7 Up lasts for 6 to 9 months. This feels a little redundant.
It's a very dynamic chart.
It really is.
I'm glad they put it in visual form. That way I can really grasp
Diet Coke.
An
opened Diet Coke can last for one day in the pantry and one day in the refrigerator. Opened Pepsi bottles can last for 1 to 3 days in the pantry, 2 to 5 days in the refrigerator.
Wait, open, like open or open and then resealed? Open and resealed, I take
it. Reseal a can? Is that even a thing?
Oh, you're right. They're saying cans.
Diet Coke can, if opened, last for 1 day in the pantry and 1 day in the refrigerator.
But we know that's not true.
Right, it's not going to be carbonated.
Yeah. Huh. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. By the way,
I'm like halfway through the can now. I've just given up.
You're fine. If anything happens to you, if you end up having a medical emergency, I can just do the rest of the show. I still haven't read those college diaries.
You'll get it.
I was
going
to do. I was thinking of you this weekend because it was Sunday, and I knew I had 2 football games to watch, and I knew I'd want to be drinking beer during most of them, which means, you know, I didn't want to get totally plowed, and I didn't want to get totally fat. So I was in the grocery store, and I saw a Michelob Ultra. Actually, that's really the truth. I was just in the store to buy some beer quickly. And I saw Michelob Ultra, and I thought, oh, yeah. I mean, it doesn't really – if this is just kind of a watered-down beer that has slightly less carbs or calories, sure, why not? And I thought, you know, I'll try it because you've talked about it on the show. I would say it does have a little bit less flavor than the Miller Lite I usually get, but, I mean, it's all very negligible anyway. And I totally enjoyed it. And then I looked it up. Apparently, Michelob Ultra barely has fewer calories or carbs than Miller Lite. It's just that they decided to really brand themselves in that way, which I think is an interesting branding exercise.
I'm tempted to debate this with you, but I'm too busy reading this website about various soft drinks and when they've no longer when they're no longer consumable. This is so much detail about this. How do you tell if soft drinks are bad, rotten, or spoiled? How do you store soft drinks to extend their shelf life? Interesting facts about soft drinks, Andrew. On the East Coast of the U.S., they call soft drinks pop. True. On the West Coast, they call soft drinks soda. Middle America tends to go with soda pop. Yet Coke remains a universal term for the word. How long are soft drinks good for when prepared in a dish? Have you ever made a dish with soft drinks in it, Andrew?
I have not. That sounds like a Midwestern thing, though. Can't you see some sort of a casserole that has a little bit of Coke in it?
Yeah, and I mean, it is used sometimes in barbecue recipes. I know that.
Yeah.
How long does Coke last if it's in a prepared dish? That depends. And then they just say, how long does ice cream last? In general, Coke lasts only as long as the quickest expiring ingredient in the dish. I don't even understand what that means.
Like if you're making like a instead of a root beer float, like a cola float, how long can you keep that? I mean, as long as it's frozen.
I don't know, but somebody put years of their life, and this has been shared 409 times. 409 people were like, we got to get the word out on this, man. Facebook friends, gather around. We've got some important information about soft drinks. You know what? I'm mocking those people, and I just reenacted this page to thousands of people for my actual job. So who's the joke on?
Yeah, I mean, it was a resource that we needed in the moment, and they were there for us. In fact, I think you should donate. Is there a donate button?
Don't praise the machine. We need all of the donations to come to our show. Another thing that I do that I actually don't know if this is – I'd be curious to get the hive mind on this, although I'm literally at the website that can probably answer the question. But I wouldn't mind getting the TBT listeners' advice on this. So we also drink a lot of club soda in this household, and a lot of times you'll crack open a can and then have a couple sips, and then it's like that's enough for the time being. Like I'll put one on the nightstand sometimes, and it feels very wasteful to have like 2 sips of it and then just dump the rest of it out because it's not, you know, free. So I will continue to consume a can of club soda when it's lost its carbonation. To me, it's just water at that point. Mm-hmm. Like it can't go bad. It's not like – you know, it's not running through the sewers next to a Ninja Turtle. Like, it's in a can. It's sitting on a nightstand. If, you know, I mean, water is stored somewhere in a river or lake or a reservoir. In this case, the water is just being stored in a can. It used to be bubbly, and now it's not bubbly. Is that a bad idea? Can carbonated water go bad?
I mean, I've been there before. Like, if you have, like, a little liter bottle of it, and you open it up and you drink. I like to drink my sodas and bubbly waters on ice. Let's say so I do it, you know, one day, and then it sits in the fridge for a few days, and I take it out, and there's, you know, maybe one more glass left in there, but it's got no more fizz. I will still pour that on ice and drink it. It still gets a little bit of a different flavor, even if it's not a flavored soda, if that makes sense. Do they add, is there sodium in there? You used to have one of those, maybe you still have one of those do-it-yourself soda makers. Is it only adding air?
We got rid of that because, or maybe it's in the basement, I don't know. But I read an article that said that those are actually, it's not a cheaper way to do it when you factor in the cost of the canister and all the other stuff.
Oh, do you have to replace those a lot?
I mean, pretty frequently. Like, it's sort of like, yeah, those seemed like they were a screaming deal. I guess what's nice is the convenience. And that you could, you don't have to go to the store. But as far as doing it instead of just buying the stuff, like in the 2 liter or whatever, I read somewhere that it was not, it was actually not cost efficient.
And it sounds like, and it's also not better for the environment because I thought once you bought one of those things, you don't
have
to replace
it. It's all terrible for the environment, honestly. Like the cans, I'm sorry, you're right. That's probably better for the environment. What we do is way worse for the environment.
Buying cans, but buying the individual cans, yeah. Yeah, I was thinking about getting a keg for the house. That way I don't have to keep on, you know, killing the environment.
You're sort of a keg half full guy.
Yeah, I really am.
I've always known you. That was one of the Kavanaugh jokes they did on SNL.
Oh, right, right.
He says, you know, he says, I'm an optimist. I'm always more of a keg half full guy.
Right.
Which got quite the laugh. Anyway, if I start to seize up with some kind of a medical condition, Andrew, you will need to take over and finish the show. I don't know what the medical implications are or what the medical consequences of drinking a spoiled Diet Coke are, but I guess it's just going to be a wait and see thing here.
All right, I'm here for you, and when I say here, I mean about 70 miles away.
All right, so let's take a quick break, then when we come back we'll tell you about this debate in Pennsylvania that they had Alex Trebek of all people moderate, and it was pretty rough. So we'll do that. Plus my new favorite audio that's probably ever happened on the show. Andrew, good find, my friend.
And what we did see is we took them turds and we crammed them in between the number there. So that's 1:32:33:30.
We'll tell you what's going on in Maine coming up. Oh, and some Blur's Day messages. Stay with us. It's DVTL. Stereo Lab.
This is an artist who goes by Ms. John Soda, and I don't know much about her or them, but I know that my friend Carrie, I believe, put this on a mixtape for me forever ago, and I've always liked this song. It's called Go Check.
If you were to leave this band in a bucket on your porch for 6 months, would it expire?
They go bad. Ms. John Soda goes bad.
Man, someone should start a website detailing all of that. Actually, you know what? Hey, let's just keep rolling this, can we? And I'm going to thank the donors of the day. Do we have enough Ms. John Soda left?
Yeah, I think so. And if not, it'll roll on to another song. By the way, I guessed on how far Bellingham, Washington is, how far away it is from Seattle. You do this drive all the time. Do you know? I said 70 miles.
Yeah, you're close. It's about 80, I believe.
You are right. It's 84.2 as the Google map flies.
Let's take a moment to thank some generous folks who supported TBTL during the TBTL-a-thon. They're making this episode possible, possibly my final episode on the show, depending on how this Diet Coke thing goes.
Ooh, you hear that, Kiki? It will be ours. Yeah. The keys to the kingdom. Sorry.
You were going to do this to me.
I'm sorry.
I thought it was going to be you and Nora, but actually, yeah, you and Kiki, that makes sense.
I mean, Nora would still be a good, like, kind of backup host, I think.
Yeah, that would be a pretty big upgrade. I'm not going to lie to you. If this show was you and Kiki and Nora, listen to that.
Yeah.
You know who would probably donate to that? Eileen Gormley of Renton, Washington. And Nancy Cook of Burien, Washington. It's a highly northwestern a group of folks today.
Oh, it really
Amy
is.
Lake of Eugene, Oregon. Zach Hofstadt of Lacey, Washington. And Mark DeVries of Mount Vernon, Washington. Not far from here. If I go down with a medical situation, I need you to call Mark DeVries and have him drive up from Mount Vernon.
Okay. I was thinking
probably the closest. I mean, there are listeners in Bellingham, but I, you know, let's give Mark a thrill since he donated. Let's let him come up and defib me.
I like that we have Amy Lake from Eugene, Oregon. Amy Lake also sounds like a place. So there was an alternative universe where we could have had a Eugene who's from Amy Lake, Oregon. I mean, that's basically just a joke that is based on a fantasy that I had in my head that isn't very interesting, but there it is.
It delighted me. Good. I don't know why. I'm loopy. I'm hepped up on spoiled Diet Coke, but I thought it was a decent spoof. Thanks, you guys. Mark, Zach, Amy, Nancy, and Eileen. Thanks for donating to TBTL. Thanks for being part of the show. Thanks for making it possible. We really do appreciate it, and we really would not be here without you. So thanks a lot. Check the rhyme.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
All right, let's talk about this Alex Trebek debate. I mean, it was actually between two gubernatorial candidates, Tom Wolf, who's a Democrat. He's the current governor. And his challenger, a Republican, Scott Wagner, were on stage. I believe this was a little earlier this week. Now, first of all, I don't know if this is explained in the story, but I'm a little confused as to why they even invited Alex Trebek of all – was Regis Philbin unavailable? Like, it's a very random person to invite to moderate the debate.
I don't know. I don't have an answer to that question either. I assumed it might have been one of those things where somebody knew somebody, you know, who's setting up the debate. They think, oh, it'll be good. It'll get us some more attention. He's a delightful man. Probably something like that happened. Because, yeah, Alex Trebek has no connection at all to Pennsylvania, so far as I know.
As it says in this article from the Washington Post, Trebek, who lives in California and is originally from Canada, wasn't an obvious choice to moderate the forum.
Right.
Initially. And by the way, this is setting a tone for the general conversation. Initially joking, he said this during the debate, that he'd been drunk when he accepted the Pennsylvania Chamber of Business and Industry's request.
I didn't see that part. Oh, my God.
He later explained that he had agreed on the condition that he could do things his way by having a, quote, conversation, not a traditional debate. Now, let me say that I don't think that's the worst idea I've ever heard, because the problem with these debates is that they're almost sort of scientifically designed to just bring out the prepared talking points in the candidates. It's very, very hard to get real authentic conversation out of these people because they're just rewarded for giving prepared statements. And so the idea that you'd want to try to shake that up a little bit, I don't think is a terrible idea. But it was from the very get-go kind of weird. The way I heard about this was just that at the beginning of the debate, Alex Trebek was I can't remember which candidate it was, but one of the candidates said "Fly Eagle, fly," which is the thing you say if you're a Philadelphia Eagles fan. And Alex Trebek decided to quiz him on like an semi-obscure trivia question about Philadelphia Eagles, basically putting him on the spot. Like, are you just saying "Fly Eagle, fly" to try to curry favor with these guests or with these attendees, or do you really know? And I think the question was about a defensive back for the Eagles who was a all-star back-to-back on different teams. I don't know the answer to that. Actually, I probably do. Let me think about that for a minute. It's the guy who got sued. I'm really doing this on the fly in my mind. I think it's the – how can I be forgetting his name? I think that it's a guy who was traded or acquired by the Eagles before their Super Bowl year. He's very good, and he got sued in South Carolina for alienation of affection because he had an affair. He basically hooked up with a gal who was married to someone else, and the woman's ex sued this football player. Fletcher Cox, I think, is his name.
I'm sorry. It would be, who is Fletcher Cox?
Pretty good spoof, my friend. Pretty good spoof.
I cannot believe he just told that joke.
I'm sorry, I played the wrong sound effect. I meant to play.
And what we did see is we took them turds and we crammed them in between the number there, so that's 1:32:33:30. Oh,
right.
That anyway, my guess is that the answer to Trebek's question was Fletcher Cox. But that's a digression. I apologize.
Can I jump in 1 second here? Now, if he asked a very kind of specific, literally trivia question like that, and the person didn't get it, I don't think the pressure is quite as much on. But I do get kind of annoyed by, you know, politicians who pretend like, oh, I'm into sport, like Romney, cheering on the, I guess, Utah Jazz or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Working as a fisherman.
Yeah. Anyway, so honestly, if a politician said something like,
it's not a terrible instinct.
Yeah.
It's not a terrible instinct on Trebek's part, because that is that kind of like annoying pandering, like, hey, what local thing is very popular? Let me embrace that local thing. Therefore, let me just play. We have a lot of tape from this, and we'll have to kind of be judicious about it. But let me just right after this. A toilet paper commercial that's auto-loading on the Philadelphia
while that
CBS
auto-loads,
station.
Let me just quickly finish my thought. I was going to say, like, it's one thing to ask a very specific trivia question, but I like the idea of Trebek coming in. This is something that I might do, because I find that practice annoying. If Trebek comes in, he's not from around here. He could almost ask a casual question like, oh, yeah, who is your quarterback now? Or maybe something just slightly harder than that, but that any Eagles fan would know. You could really stump, you could really sink somebody's campaign.
Right. I mean, you could expose someone to be, fraudulent about a not important topic, but it would definitely set a bad tone.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can play this really quick here from
fast paced. I will not tolerate any booing or hissing.
Oh, see, now I'm playing a news story that's basically about the whole thing. I'll spare you the specific trivia question, but I'm with you that I don't think any of this was a bad idea. I just think that the execution wasn't great, and it was one of those things that sounds better on paper than when you actually try to do it.
Yeah, apparently what happened is he wanted it to be a conversation and less of a debate, but how that translated itself was he talked way too much. So a little bit of background. These two candidates, this is their only debate together. As you know, like usually if one candidate is the incumbent or is leading in the polls, they want to have as few debates as possible. If you have a challenger, they want to have as many as possible. And so in this case, Wolf, he's the incumbent, right? He was like, okay, I'll agree to one debate. And it's only 45 minutes. That's not very much for a gubernatorial debate if it's the only one. And so this is the one chance for voters to actually hear these guys go back and forth. And Trebek just thinks that he is the most charming guy in the world. I know we have some details we can read from the story, but he just goes on and on and telling anecdotes and not letting them talk. And by the end of the debate, they literally boo him because he cuts off the last candidate answering a question, says, "We're out of time." And he took up all the time. He was literally booed at the end.
He had a really bad – he seemed to have very bad instincts for what topics he should be getting into – on a personal level, and also how you frame these things with an audience in place. This is from this Washington Post article. Polite laughter from the audience quickly turned to boos. Trebek looked out at the crowd watching the two candidates face off in Hershey, Pennsylvania. "Don't go there," the white-haired television host said, wagging a finger. Oh, this is because he said that the only group with lower approval rating than the Pennsylvania legislature was the Catholic Church. And the crowd was rightfully horrified at that joke. This is like a way too dark of a joke to make during the opening comments about this debate. And so then he says to the crowd that's horrified, "Don't go there. I was born and raised in the Catholic Church."
A woman said that to him, right? Didn't somebody from the audience, she shouted him, "Don't go there"? Did I misunderstand that?
No, this is Trebek.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, so Trebek says the Pennsylvania legislature, the only thing that has lower approval ratings than them is the Catholic Church. The crowd is nervous and giving him a bad reaction. Then he says, "Don't go there. I was born and raised in the Catholic Church, and I'm just as ticked off as everybody else is over what happened with the church." And then he went on, unfazed by the ticking clock. "When I was a young teenager, I attended a Catholic boarding school run by the Oblates of Mary Immaculate. 250 students, other boys and I, spent 3 years sharing the same accommodations, 24/7, with 44 priests, and not once in those 3 years was there any sexual misbehavior. Now, boys are pretty sharp. We talk. We would have known. So I believe that there are Catholic priests out there who are able to minister to their congregations without preying, that's P-E-R-Y, on the young people. This is just like before the debate's even really going. He's just weirdly extemporating on the lack of sexual abuse he witnessed in Catholic school as a boy.
And you read that about twice as fast as he talks. I mean, that's the thing about this. Imagine feeling like time is running out. It says, when I was a young teenager, I attended a Catholic. Like, he just takes his time. I haven't seen him say this exact part, but I've watched clips of the debate. And that's what's so infuriating. Like, not only does he go on these stem winders, but he's always just talking in that Alex Trebek kind of pacing, as if he doesn't have a care in the world. And everybody else is like, this is our state government that we're talking about here.
Yeah, this was not the, like, this was not for the, you know, Bucks County Comptroller or something. This is like a very important job in the state of Pennsylvania, arguably the most important political position in the state. And they have one debate, and Trebek, this is, you know, his style works for Jeopardy because he's done it for years and years. And it's just kind of – it's sort of how it goes. But this is a whole different world. Now there's some tape too. You've got a bunch of it over there. Do you want to play some of it to kind of illustrate what the vibe was?
So I don't have this totally cut up or anything. I'm just going to play it raw. This is from C-SPAN playing a bit of it. And it's going to get into some details here about some sort of tax that they're kind of debating. But Alex Trebek says something about the tax, and then the audience kind of starts correcting him, and then he starts interacting with the audience.
Severance tax is what he's talking about, whatever that is.
They all have, we don't.
All right. So the severance tax would bring in a lot of money. No, it would not. Who says no, it would not?
Alex.
You have the impact fee now, which has brought in $1.2 billion in the past 7 years. And you're telling me that a 6% severance tax would not bring in money?
First of all, I don't know anybody who's proposing.
You're not part of the debate. These two are.
Shouting at the audience.
Yeah, like, who's he talking to there?
At that point, he literally points at the audience and says that to the person who's still, like, kind of interacting with him. And then...
He's just, like, battling the audience. By the way, this is my... You hosted a debate or some, like, town forum in, like, Burien?
It was, like, with candidates. It was less of a debate, but it was some sort of a forum. Yeah, the candidate forum.
But, like, you can identify with this. There would be nothing that would be more terrifying than... You're not from there, like, he's from California, and you're trying to say something with some authority, and the crowd just starts audibly disagreeing with you, and you just have that realization, like, oh, I've misunderstood this.
Yeah.
Now, my thought is it's probably more of a political issue. Like, in other words, it sounds like he actually did a lot of prep for it.
Yeah, I agree.
And he's not a stupid guy, so I bet you that it was less that he was grossly misinformed on the issue and more that it's a political issue, and so... Yeah. There are people that agree with it and people that would be like the head tax in Seattle. But even so, when you're like not like, you know, if you're not like a longtime Pennsylvania journalist who's just been – who knows these issues, like, you know, if you're not like the Knute Berger of your state or the Joni Balter or something, like if you don't have the stuff down cold, there'd be nothing worse than like trying to make a point and then the crowd just starts disagreeing with you. Just be like, oh my God. Did I just say something really stupid?
Right, yeah. I would be like Genevieve when she was a kid and she had to go to that piano recital and hadn't practiced at all. And she goes out, tries tapping out a few notes, and then just stands up and says, I'm sorry, I am not prepared for this, and walks off the stage. I think about
so
that
great.
All the time.
Honestly, that's one of the most – that's one of the most sort of, I don't know what you'd call it, self-possessed things I've ever heard a kid doing.
I think her parents remain mad at her to this day, according to her. So I want to fast forward. This is later on. This is maybe 5 minutes later, a few minutes later. I can't remember what this is. I was scanning it earlier. This is another, like, very awkward moment, though, where I think this will give you a sense of how Alex Trebek is not concerned about the clock at all.
We need to make our lives better.
Before I get you two to make your closing statements, I would like to offer a suggestion to the people of Pennsylvania.
Now, I just want to say that he was the other candidate raised his hand, was about to say something. Like, we are here to hear the candidates.
For this election, forget that you're Republicans or Democrats. We just had a few heated words about the severance tax. If you believe the severance tax would be beneficial, would bring in hundreds of millions of dollars that would help with education and other problems in the state, then call up the people who are running in your districts, ask them a question, and say, are you in favor of the severance tax or against it? If they're in favor, say, all right, I'm going to vote.
He's literally wagging his finger at the audience while he's taking his time, kind of telling them what to do.
And what is he saying here? He is saying, if you like this idea of this particular tax, then you should find out if the person you might be voting for supports the tax, and if they do, you should vote for them. What is the purpose of that? Like, he's explaining exactly the mechanics of how people choose the candidates they're voting for. Why would he need to do that? And also, why is he taking up the time that the candidates should be having to debate the issue?
Now, keep in mind, he said, before I let you guys give your closing statement. And then he starts giving his closing statement. I don't even think we're halfway through it.
Vote for you. If they happen to be from your party, good. If from the other party, vote for them. If you're against the severance tax, same deal. Call them up and say, are you for or against? If they're against,
you just said same deal.
Yes. For them. Okay.
You don't have to explain it. That's Rich coming from me, by the way.
What's that?
Who overexplained? I said, that's Rich coming from me because I overexplain everything. But, like, where it's like times, you know, mime is money here, bud. And, like, you just said, if you're the other persuasion, same deal. Okay, we get it. Same deal. Don't vote along party lines. Vote based on the issue. Okay, we got it. Alex, thank you.
Okay, last piece of tape. So now he was going to let him give closing statements, but then one of the candidates, and I don't know them by their faces, so I don't know which one this is, wants to respond to what he just said, get the last word in on the tax issue. And then I think what happens is, because of all that, they run out of time for the closing statements.
Yes, well, we already are. There's
You're not taxing them that much because most of them are based in Texas or Oklahoma.
There's a whole
All right, we're out
problem.
Of time. We're out of
yeah.
time.
Yeah.
What did I tell you guys at the beginning? No booing or hissing.
I think they were booing
and now
you.
Now you're directing it at me. All right.
I do. I got to say, I think that he has a charm about him where he has a self-awareness. As much as this whole segment is about him not being self-aware, in that moment he is self-aware. He doesn't just get embarrassed or angry. He tries to kind of joke his way out of it while kind of pointing the finger at himself.
And he also has a lot of self-confidence in a way that is actually kind of disarming because, like you said, that's part of him being able to poke fun at himself while he's up there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he doesn't seem rattled. If he is rattled, he's not letting on. And so that kind of – there's a certain charm to that as well. But, yeah, not good. What I will say, though, because I heard you queuing this tape up before the show.
Yeah.
He talked to, like, I don't know, like the local TV station or somebody about how he thought the debate went afterwards. And I got to say – this almost won me back over. He was seemed to be extremely self-aware about how much he bungled this.
The bottom line for all of this is that if you were a Wagner supporter before the debate, you still are. If you were a Wolf supporter before the debate, you still are. If you were a Trebek supporter before the debate, that one may be questionable.
Yeah, before in the
did you want to hear the whole thing? Did you want to hear the earlier stuff?
Well, he just says that he literally admits it didn't go well. And he just basically says he kind of lays out all the ways he screwed up. He just says, I want it to be a conversation, but I didn't realize that I didn't have the power to really cut these guys off when they started talking, and that it just didn't really work the way I wanted it to. So I give him credit for at least admitting that it was kind of an S show.
While I'm playing tape directly off of YouTube, that clip just ended, and now it's showing me like suggested things I can watch, some of which I've watched before. And I remember, like, why is the Hardy Boys on here? I was trying to sleep the other night. I forgot about this. And, you know, I like to listen to books on tape. And I just, like, I didn't want to spend tons of time trying to find and buy a book on tape. So I bought Hardy Boys 3. Or I didn't buy it. I just found it on YouTube. Hardy Boys 3, The Secret of the Old Mill.
By now, the Hardys and Chet had reached the boy.
He was still seated on the sidewalk holding his head. "Are you all right?" Frank asked, bending down. The boy was about 14 years old, very thin and tall for his age.
I think so.
A grateful look came into the boy's clear brown eyes.
Thanks for the warning, fellas. Whew, that was close.
I know this is corny and probably puts me on some watch lists, but something about like just listening to like a children's
that
book or a
so
young
sleepy.
Adult book.
Yeah. I love it.
It's a very comforting way to go to bed because I read these as
Absolutely.
A kid.
And who knew that Rod Serling read those?
Yeah, not me.
That's great. That honestly, I'm gonna have to. Hold on, I have to have another drink of tainted Diet Coke to wake up.
Here, I'll email this to you. You ever do that? You ever watch like listen to a That's book on YouTube to fall asleep?
No, I don't listen to books on tape because my mind wanders a lot, and when I'm reading for myself, my mind wanders. But then I realize, oh, I haven't been. I'm looking at these words, but I'm not taking them in. And then I go back a couple pages, but. I feel like I'm always rewinding when I listen to books.
Oh yeah, me too. Like I have trouble. Like if I'm actually trying to like take it in. But I mean, in this case, I listen to that stuff not so that I will take it in. I find something I don't care about, like an old Hardy Boys thing, and just like it's like a sleeping pill for me. Like if my mind is racing, I just try to like kind of focus on the words, then eventually I fall asleep.
The my version of that is I will watch golf.
Oh, nice!
Sometimes
Love
on like
that.
A Sunday, and just like lie on the couch, like
yes.
Dagwood.
That's so great.
Or whoever is that? Was he the one always napping on the couch?
Yeah, with
his
a big
cartoon
sandwich. You'd make those giant Dagwood sandwiches.
I would. Yeah, I just do that, and man, that just really, really. What I should do is find like speaking of YouTube, I should just find a bunch of old, like you know, like golf games. I guess you would call it, golf tournaments that are probably on YouTube.
Oh yeah,
and just I could watch the or I could listen to those while I'm trying to fall asleep. I don't really have sleeping problems. As I've mentioned, I have a variety of fantasies, including doing karate on people and slam dunking basketballs.
Right.
And that usually does it for me. It's the process of thinking. Some of the thoughts are darker, too, but it's like just kind of like what I have to do is I have to think about a plan in my mind that or think about doing an activity in my mind that involves a lot of planning and kind of like mm-hmm. – When I say darker, I don't mean anything like illegal. I just mean like, you know, booby trap, digging a hole and putting spikes in it when I used to have a neighbor in LA I didn't like, you know, just typical kid stuff. No, but like anything what really makes my brain just shut off immediately is thinking about something that has a methodical – has a series of steps that have to happen. And as I'm thinking through the steps very logically, it does something to my brain. It just like slows it down and I go to sleep immediately.
Yeah, that makes sense. Tell me what this does for you.
25 feet for birdie.
This is Seve up at 16, Gary.
Seve is now looking.
Seve by Asteros, sure.
A good 50, 60 feet. Shark, are you up there on 18?
Yeah, Gary.
Trying to get out of the hordes of people down below?
Yes. I enjoyed today. I wish it didn't stop, actually. It may not stop yet.
Greg Norman, the shark.
I was playing well, except for my last tee shot, so it was a fun day.
Good bit of work there in 17, 18. Were you shooting at a number at that point?
This is the Westchester Classic Golf. You know way more about this than I would have thought, although I shouldn't be surprised. What year do you put this at, since you have some context clues there?
Oh, God. Seve Ballesteros is playing, and Greg Norman is playing.
Norman looks like he's... Is he commentating there? He had a headset on.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe.
So if
but if Seve Ballesteros is still playing, I'm going to say 91 or 92.
1988. I'm gonna give it... Hey, there's the bell. Say, how does that come through, by the way? It's pretty far away from me right now. But
it's not bad.
Not bad. It could be better.
Obviously the...
Right. I also got a giant metal rusty door so that when we introduce David from
the
basement...
Did you get that at Broadcast Coffee, too?
Yeah, yes. Anyway.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I'm not somebody who really knows anything about golf, but I think there was a period of my life where I just consumed... so much sports media that those names, and this was sort of pre Tiger Woods. So Tiger Woods kind of takes up all the oxygen or a lot of the oxygen in pro golf, but there's just lots of, you know, Tom Watson and I'm trying to think of some of these other, you know, there was a crazy story. There was a golfer named Payne Stewart. I remember I worked at a radio station when this happened. Payne Stewart was A, a really good golfer, and B, he would wear kind of like traditional, like Scottish, like, mm-hmm. I don't know, golfing knickers kind of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
He would have those kind of like poofy pants and then like long, tight socks that I don't know if the pants tucked into him or not, but he was flying on a private jet. This is the nuttiest thing. And there was a crack in the windshield of the jet, and the pilots died. And the jet was on autopilot, and it continued to fly across the country with Payne Stewart and a bunch of people in it. And everybody knew the jet was flying off, like it wasn't on its path anymore, but it was not crashing. It flew until it ran out of fuel. I think it crashed in like North Dakota. And I'm sitting there at the radio station. I'm like, Payne Stewart's dead. And he's not dead yet, but we know he's going to be dead. How crazy is that?
Very. And
is that
upsetting.
An insane story?
Yes. What year was this?
Sorry. That would have been late 90s because I started working in radio.
1999, it says here. Oh,
isn't that
my
a crazy story?
God. A Learjet crash. I'm like, surprised that I didn't.
Hours, too.
I mean, I guess there's a lot that, as I've demonstrated in the show, that I don't know. But, I mean, that is – I would feel like I would have heard of that. Man.
I mean, that I feel like that's one of the more bizarre news stories I've ever heard about because you now it's also possible that – I know this is dark. I'm sorry. This is one of the other things I think about to fall asleep. No, not true. I guess it's possible that Payne Stewart also passed away. I mean, the best case scenario would be everybody on the plane passed away from whatever the issue was. Because it would be much worse for there to be some people who were alive and the pilots were dead. And I'm thinking about a Learjet. This is pre-9/11. I'm sure you could just go up and open the cockpit door. It wasn't like – I was thinking – you know what I was doing? I was kind of doing the Mandela effect of sorts. I was thinking, oh, they could never get access to the cockpit. But this was pre-9/11 and it wasn't the same world. So they probably all died from whatever it was. You've probably got the news story in front of you. What does it say?
Oh, I've got a Wikipedia page. It was October 25th, 99, getting up to the anniversary here. Scheduled to fly from Orlando to Dallas. The aircraft was climbing to its assigned altitude on autopilot, quickly lost cabin pressure, and all on board were incapacitated due to hypoxia. So thank God. The aircraft continued climbing past its assigned altitude, then failed to make the westward turn over Dallas. But the thing about this that really shocked me, Luke, okay, four passengers on board, Payne Stewart, his agents, Van Ardan and Robert Fraley, and Bruce Borland, a golf architect. I don't know if that answers your questions, but I didn't realize when you first started telling this story that everybody knew about it before the plane crashed. So, in other words, this had already hit the national news before the plane crashed.
Yeah.
That is,
I was on CNN. It was like this plane is flying across the country because what happened was when it started to like go off the rails in terms of the flight path, various control towers were trying to talk to it and they couldn't get. I'm sure that – I think jets were scrambled to kind of go look at it and stuff. So I guess I had the story – I was misremembering the story. It wasn't that Payne Stewart was like trapped on a death jet. It was that everybody on the jet, as they said, was incapacitated. But it was weird because the jet kept flying for like hours.
That's still though. It's
a very bizarre story.
Yeah, something to not think about.
Anyway, but
I'm on a plane.
Next time you're on a Learjet, just keep your head on a swivel.
Right,
but
right.
I've never been on a private jet, and I wonder if – I mean I've been on I've been on airplanes that are not like 747. Like I've done some news stories where you have to get on like a military airplane or things like that. But I've never been on like a private jet like a Jay-Z flies on. And honestly, considering how many things I've gotten to do that are above my station in life, I'm kind of surprised that's never happened.
Yeah, especially given that – I mean this is maybe – maybe this isn't a good point, but your relationship, you're in a somewhat promotional relationship with Alaska Airlines, I believe. Don't they underwrite LiveWire?
Yeah, they do. And I've been on a chartered plane, but all that means is they put a bunch of people on one of their regular planes that you couldn't have bought a ticket for.
Yeah.
But like I have never been on a private aircraft that was a jet. I've been in a Cessna.
Yeah.
My friend's uncle had a Cessna. We flew in that. But, like, that whole getting on a private jet and flying somewhere, that's That's I don't know if that'll ever happen in my life, and that's okay. They sound dangerous based on
right. All right, I know you know about TBTL the podcast. You're listening to it right now, but have you tried TBTL the newsletter? Because you can just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
The other thing I want to talk about on today's show before we get to Blursday messages is this story. Where did you see this? Do you have some kind of Google News alert for stories about Moose Turd out of Maine?
No. Let's give a shout out to Bruce, formerly of Lake Stevens, and now I want to say Athens, Alabama. Is that a place?
Hey, what up, Bruce?
He emailed me this thing, and I just was happening to check email quickly before we started recording, and I hit play on this, and it's worth listening to.
Man. First of all, it's in Somerville, Maine, pronounced Somerville. This woman named Mary Winchenbach has a company called Turdy Works. Now, let's just start with the fact that she spells turd T-I-R-D. Have you ever seen turd spelled that way?
No. I had a camp.
Is that regional?
I remember being a kid, or like, you know, like, yeah, a kid, and learning that turd was spelled with a U and being disappointed because I always assumed it was spelled with an E, and it seems better with an E. In the past, I'm going to say 30 years or so, I've come to grips with the fact that it's spelled with a U, and now we got this woman spelling it with an I. I guess it's branding.
I guess so. Do you want to just play the news report?
Yeah.
Should I read what she's doing? I feel like the tape is really the key on this one.
Yeah, now I have this here. Do you want me to play it from my end?
Yeah, would you mind?
Yeah, and I believe, let's see, this is distributed by the Associated Press. It looks like this might have come from WJCL. So here we go.
There's a lot going on at this Somerville home. There are two adults, three kids, more than 60 animals, including some fish, and a whole bunch of moose turds. Mary Winchenbach runs Turdy Works. It's art made from the stuff that moose leave behind.
Everyone takes a crap. Everyone goes to the bathroom, so everyone can relate to that. And the terms that I use to name these products are everyday terms that, you know, people are used to hearing and stuff. So it just kind of, you just try to, you know, combine the two to come up with something halfway decent that's funny, you know. For example, the first thing that we make now, instead of a cuckoo clock, see, this is a poo-poo clock. And what we did see is we took them turds and we crammed them in between the number there, so that's 1, 32, 33, 30.
That's just one of many products she offers.
Now over here we make fecal people. And depending upon the shape of them middle turds right there, we can do them with big boobs or guts or butts or long legs or short legs. See, because there's no two turds that are ever alike. Have you ever seen a turd, the two turds alike?
Guess
not. No.
Mary says half the battle is getting her product, but to do that, she doesn't have to travel far.
The turds are all local. We just go out and track the moose, and wherever the moose are, they're going to take a crap. And I have found that when a moose takes a dump, you walk about 50 yards in any direction, and they take another dump.
It's a fairly simple and efficient business model.
And when a moose takes a dump, they'll crap out between 200 and 400 turds every time they take a crap. So it's like I get $5 a turd for these things. So I get jumping right up and down. I get excited when I see a turd.
Since going viral, she doesn't know what her next local stop will be, but she's upping her game with a new Turdy Works Facebook page to peddle her poop.
Get on there, and that's all my turds are on that page right there with the prices, and click on them, and then get to me and let me know what you need for turds, and I ship everywhere.
Brian Sullivan, WABI TV5 News, Somerville.
Well, she knows how to market her. She knows that she's, you know, if she's got a camera in front of her, she knows that she can go viral.
You can hear that, like, she's got her rap down.
Yeah.
pretty well. She looks kind of like a slightly younger version of Napoleon Dynamite's grandmother. I mean, I don't think I've ever even been to Maine, but you've been to Maine, right?
Yeah. It's hard not. When you're living up there, you just take the wrong step and suddenly you're halfway into another state.
Does she seem to jive with your sense of Mainers? And that, is that what they're called, Mainers?
Yeah, I think so. And yeah, I mean, she definitely, you know, again, she has an idea of herself as a character, definitely. But you also run into people. Like, there is a sense of pride up there. That kind of flinty New England thing that is a real thing, especially for the people who've been there for a long time or their families have been there for a long time. And a lot of them do see themselves as characters, but it's not necessarily fake. You know, I always talk about that toll booth operator guy who, like, we were going from, I don't know, we had Massachusetts plates and we were going from Maine to New Hampshire. And Genevieve and I were new to the area and we didn't know how it worked. And we tried to use maybe New Hampshire tokens for a Maine toll. I don't know what it was. And the toll booth guy was like, ah, honey, I'm in New Hampshire now. And like, he did this whole thing that I believe was really him, but also he knows he's putting on a show. And that seems like kind of a New Englandy thing, especially in New Hampshire, where, you know, the politicians come around every 2 to 4 years every 4 years. You know, there's a reason why New Hampshire stole first in the nation, and most of it has to do with kind of just the image and idea of it. And so I feel like people there need to put on a real show of New Englandness for all these outsiders who are coming in to try to
flintiness.
Get into DC. Yeah, exactly.
I will say that a couple things for this woman, not to shame her, but like, her kitchen is a disaster. She should have definitely cleaned it up before.
Full of shit.
You're selling moose shit. At least do it in a tidy kitchen. But the other thing is, I'm looking at some of the other products that she has. She has a picture frame that is just, it looks like something a kid would make, because it's just a picture frame with moose turds glued to it. That's the extent of the artistry. And then it just has the words written in the back of the picture frame where, like, you, when you put the picture in, it will cover these words, but the words just say, your favorite shithead, and then there's an arrow. So I guess you're supposed to put a picture of somebody that you love but who you playfully think of as a shithead in the moose poop thing. I can see people buying this, by the way. Please, nobody buy me this moose turd clock. Even if you're just trying to be funny, because it will just be one more, literally and figuratively, one more piece of crap that I have to deal with. But I can see, I know a lot of people who would absolutely buy this clock for their friends or loved ones, thinking it was hilarious.
Yeah.
This woman's probably making a tidy sum on this.
It's all gifts, right? Nobody is kind of like, oh, good, this is, I was looking for a clock. I needed a clock. I was looking for something that was either going to be in kind of a, I don't know, maybe I was looking at one of those tree trunk cross section clocks, but here's one that's made of shit. You know, this one is probably better. People are just getting it so that they can take it back home to wherever they come from and be like, look, I was in Maine. They literally sell moose turds up there. Isn't it great? And then the person's like, yeah. And they laugh for about 10 seconds, which is 5 seconds longer than deserved. And then it goes in the trash.
Yeah. It's, can you agree though that, like, as far as turds go, crap goes, it's probably pretty moose turds are pretty not gross, just like cow pies are actually not that gross because they just eat grass. It's like you're just eating, if all you're eating is vegetation and then your body like leaches out the nutrients in the vegetation and then your body just gets rid of the vegetation that's had all of the nutrients removed from it, it's not super gross, at least.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you're just trolling our friend and listener, Phyllis F. Fletcher, right now, because last time we talked about this, I don't know if you recall, it was a few weeks back, and there was a Browns commentator who said that he would eat poop if the Browns drafted Baker Mayfield, which they did. It took him a year to do it, and then he ate horse poop the other day, and then you went on this exact argument that if you have to eat poop, like, eat it from an animal like that who...
Yeah, at least I'm consistent.
Yeah. I remember Phyllis then texted us both and was like kind of, I think the conversation really grossed her out. And then when you mentioned that he had put ketchup on it, was like, I think the final straw.
That's gross to me no matter what.
Just because it's ketchup. In Chicago, they never put ketchup on poop.
That's one of the big things there about being a Chicagoan. Should we, Should we get into some Blursday messages?
Yeah.
With the email every week. I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man. It's not from a female.
There's a right way to rock and a wrong way to roll. You can just listen to your soul. Just remember that life is number one. You can be having so much fun. Just remember that life is much fun. You can be number one.
Never not funny.
Are we doing a promo for Never Not Funny? They did a promo for us once.
Yeah, they really sold it.
Yeah, it was great. That's why we're so famous now. All right. I'm stalling here
and
a little bit.
Why we're always not funny.
I call that always not funny. Could you write that down? I may need a show title. I got some late breaking ones in here because we're recording. We're making tomorrow's coffee today, so I'm glad I checked.
Oh, that's another good reason that I'm glad we clarified that, because if on Thursday people send in a message and it doesn't make it in, please don't think that we were snubbing you. It's just because of the timing of this. We could always include some of tomorrow's coffee next week in the Blursday messages.
Absolutely. In fact, this person is saying, this is from Stephanie, my brother. Jeez, why did I say that? Sorry, Freud. My husband, Gregory Brown, is one of the tens. I know he's called in a few times to contribute to your conversation, most notably to talk about bubbles in the airport toilet, I believe. Oh, yes. I think because I get a kick out of using public restrooms that are brand new clean, so clean you can still see the bubbles left over from the janitorial staff. I do remember getting an email or a email about that. Anyway, include him in your birthday shout-outs. He's turning 39 on October 4th, so that's quote-unquote today. Happy Blursday, Gregory Brown.
Happy Blursday.
Matt says, I want to wish my wife and the longest-running co-bro of my show, or co-chick of my flick, Julie, a happy 31st Blursday on today, October 4th. It's her actual Blursday. She's a super hard-working PhD student at the University of Minnesota in the veterinary school. And any good thoughts you can send her way on her Blursday would be awesome. I'm going to pause here for good thoughts.
This is my good thought music.
Yeah, me too. Happy Blursday, Julie. Sarah wants to send a shout out, a belated Blursday to Gillian. I know I'm pronouncing it correctly because she says it's like a fish's gills, Gillian. She says, Gillian, it was awesome meeting you and your husband at the TBTL Mariners ball game. You are the best wingman, and I hope to see you guys again soon. Luke, I love this. So Sarah and Gillian just met last week at a TBTL event, and now they're giving Blursday shout-outs across our very airwaves. How awesome
Sweet.
Is that?
That's great. See, the Mariners may have flamed out at the end of the season, but the bond of friendship between the Tens, that's the Oakland A's can never take that away from us.
The Mariners, the Mariners didn't make it? I stopped. Lost track. Happy 40th Blursday to myself, Abby from Chelmsford, Massachusetts. It's pronounced Worcester. Listening to my favorite bean dip and Australian mystery podcast is like getting a little birthday present every day. Keep up the great hashtag content. Power out. And happy Blursday as the music dies out here. I can get us some more hot licks. Happy Blursday to Lauren, who turned, as she says, blurdy 9 last week.
Blurdy 30.
blurdy
is the new 30.
That's the show title. All right. Happy Blur Day, everybody.
Yay. I guess that's going to wrap it up here on this Thursday edition of the show. Anything else that we need to say?
I don't think so. I don't like to talk unless I have sweet, sweet bass riffs underneath me. So I'm kind
of... I know, me too. You get addicted to that.
I'm spoiled now.
Can you do me a kindness? Can you make like a two-hour version of that and we'll just play it under the show?
Yes, I will. And I know the listeners will love it. And I won't be able to confirm it because I'm not on Facebook. I'm actually on Facebook right now accidentally. I had to log back in because I was going to try to create an event page. Oh, have we promoted our event yet?
We have not on this edition of the show. Thursday, next Blursday, we will be at Bauhaus Brew Lab. Labs? I think it's plural. They've got labs.
Mm-hmm.
Bauhaus Brew Labs in Minneapolis, 7:30. We're going to do the show from 7:30 to about 8:30. Nora McInerney will be there, and it's going to be a swell time. You don't even need tickets. You just need to show up. I don't know. I assume it's all ages, but I don't know that for a fact. I'm sure the website could tell you.
Luke, I almost made a terrible mistake.
What?
I had a Blursday hiding in my emails. I would like to wish...
Oh, my God.
This is from Michelle. I would like to wish Mark a happy Blursday, October 10th. This is from Michelle, his TBTL daddy. And yes, we think 10 out of 10 should be the... Oh, 10-10. October 10th should be the official 10s day. That's from Michelle. Okay. Wow, that was close.
That was seriously close. My goodness.
Okay.
Speaking of events, if you are hearing this show and it's not super late on Thursday, you could maybe, I don't know if there's tickets still left, but you could maybe come to Livewire in Portland. I mentioned on yesterday's show, Emily Heller, comedian, will be there. Also, Tommy Pico, who's a really interesting poet, a podcast host. Eli Saslow, who's written a great book. He's a Pulitzer Prize winner. And then the Helio Sequence. And then Mosho the Cat Rapper. He's a guy from Portland. He loves cats. He raps about cats. Should we go out with a Mosho the Cat Rapper
song?
Sure.
Yes. Let me, I'm trying to open up. Unless you have one there, I'm going to open up my thing.
No, I don't actually. And I'm going to be totally honest with you. I don't know if I've ever heard Mosho's cat rapping. He's going to be our fascinating friend. But, probably not in Spotify.
Yeah.
You're probably going to have to go.
Why was I even doing that?
You're going to have to go with YouTube.
While we are plugging things, download Spotless.
Spotless.
We posted our second show. If you like me, which, whatever, or if you like Hannah Brooks Olson, or if you like to hear us talk about cleaning, Spotless is the podcast for you. We did something really cool this week. We ran an experiment live on the show about getting gum off of carpet, and it blew our goddamn minds. So check it out.
Oh, man, dude, I came into your house, and you had like a industrial carpet sample board in your house.
Yeah, I had to go to we needed a carpet sample so we could stick gum in it and then see if this guy's tip for getting it out of the carpet would work. So I went into this carpet store and I felt bad because I went in and I was going to tell him the truth, but then in the last minute I lied and said I need it for my kid's project. And they didn't even ask. Like, I felt really bad about that. Like, I could have just
ever heard you lie, unless you've lied to me and I didn't know it was happening. But if I would be, I would... It'd be weird for me to just watch you telling a falsehood to someone.
The scary thing about it was lying when you don't plan on lying is a very uncomfortable situation that I found myself in, because it's like, wait, where did that come from? Who am I? But at the very last minute, I didn't want to. I just wanted to head off any questions. So I said, like, oh, I don't know if I said daughter or kid. I think I just kind of mumbled, oh, yeah, my kid's doing a project. And then I immediately felt bad. And the woman was so gracious, and she gave me a whole huge thing of carpet samples that we can continue to use. Like, we can check.
Well,
it,
why don't you? This stinks. Is see. This is a place you could take the show. You should go back with a microphone and apologize to the woman, and talk to her, and then that can be a narrative arc on Spotless.
That's true, and then she could become kind of a part of the show. She could be here,
part of it,
ringing our bell. I am. How about Cat Emotions? This is I Am Mosho on. Is that right, Mosho?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mosho.
Yeah. Okay.
So we'll go out with some cat rapping by Mosho. I've never listened to this song before. I may have a lot of swears, which is hurtful to the cats. You know, honestly, Mosho, you don't have to do that.
Will somebody throw the cats?
Hey, thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for being a part of TBTL. We are going to be right back here tomorrow with more imaginary radio for you. So until then, go Mariners, go eat a bagel, go Browns, go Seahawks, go Game of Throws, my fantasy team that is 3-1, not to brag.
I'm 1-3.
And please remember, we'll be back here tomorrow with more imaginary radio. Till then, please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
I got cat emotions. I got cat emotions. See me up in Portland, and you know I be floating. Floating on the streets, I be bringing mad heat when it comes to these cats. I'm the king, and that's me. I got cat emotions. I got cat emotions. See me up in Portland, and you know I be floating. Floating through the streets, I be bringing mad heat when it comes to these cats. I'm the king, and that's me. Already know that I put my heart on it and I walk on it. Tell the cat people how I feel, or I can talk on it. Cause I'm real, man. I'ma tell you that deal, man. They all doubted me, and yeah, I
been up in that field, man, but I made it out. Then I really went to school. Then I went to college and got my knowledge. Then I graduated, levitated, then I said, man, I wanna do my music. I'm gonna put my mind to it. And I love my cats. I don't care what y'all think, man, I grind for it.
Power out.